Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
One of the best things about getting older is just being more relaxed with yourself, more accepting of yourself, more at peace with where you're at and loving yourself more, and and understanding that other things are more important.
Hello and welcome to season 3 of Beautiful Lives, the podcast in which I, Madeline Spencer, invite a guest to reflect on the parts of their life story where beauty rituals or products have played a role, and how what they saw in the mirror, or perceived they saw in the mirror, has had an impact. Today I'm joined by the actress Ida Williams. We talk about a panoply of things, including her eureka moment after the death of her grandma when she ditched her plan to become a tax attorney and decided to pursue her dream of acting. The culture shift from living in LA to moving to the UK, how pregnancy affected her body, and how being criticised for gaining weight impacted her, and also, of course, touch on her favourite products. I've added 3 questions to the end of each interview for this season, so I hope you'll enjoy hearing Ida's answers to them too. Before you listen to our chat, I just wanted to say a huge thank you to those of you who tuned in to the previous seasons and for telling your friends about the podcast. Please do, as always, find me on social media and tell me your thoughts on the episode and who you'd love to hear from. And if you have a minute, I'd really appreciate it if you could rate and review the podcast and, of course, subscribe. Right, enough from me. Here's Ida.
Hello, Ada.
Hello.
Hi, welcome
Ida,
to the show.
Ida. A lot of people call me Ada, and they can.
Where does your name come from?
It's Turkish. I think it was like a disagreement between my parents.
Yeah.
Because my mom wanted Aida.
Yes, like A-I.
Exactly. Yeah. And my dad wanted Ida, and then I somehow ended up with Ida, but it's spelled Ada, which is very confusing.
Do you have to correct everyone?
Everybody.
Okay, fine. I don't feel too bad.
By the way, I've gotten to the point where when people call me Ada, I actually don't usually correct them because I don't mind. And I'm so used to being called Ada, but it is, if we're going to start out the interview, it's Ida.
And also, for the people listening to this, you might not have to correct them in the future.
Right.
Quite handy.
Well, I think it's kind of like, what is it, like Demi Moore or Demi Moore? I have one of those like irritating.
Is it Demi or Demi?
I think it's Demi. I always said Demi.
I mean, I've always said Demi Moore.
I've always said Demi Moore too. Yeah. But I mean, not to her face. She could correct me.
No.
What if I say Demi and she goes, it's Demi?
Yeah. You'll have to test that one.
I'll have to you know what?
Report back.
I will. I've seen her out.
Yeah.
Next time I see her out, I'll say her name at her and see if she throws shade back at me. And I'll be like, listen, I'm part of the tribe. I get it.
You could do that with all the celebrity names though, because there are a bunch of like quite difficult ones.
Yeah, like what are some of the ones people always get wrong? Like, or at least there's like a question mark on.
I don't know. I feel like there are quite a few and yet none are coming to mind.
I know. I feel like that too.
Things though, like Sting, for example.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know what
his real name is.
Yeah. What is his real name?
You're right. What is his real name?
So I think I'd go, hi, Sting.
I have done that.
Yeah.
To Sting.
When you meet really famous people, do you sometimes last name them? Because like, I, for example, met Helena Christensen, and when I met her, in my head, she's not Helena, she's Helena Christensen.
You gave the full name.
I said, yeah, nice to meet you, Helena Christensen.
That's so funny.
You do that?
No, I don't think I do that.
Good.
But I'm trying to think. I don't,
very cool.
Like, if I were to meet Barack Obama, I wouldn't go like, hi, Barack Obama.
No. Okay, I probably would, but I'm spectacularly
uncool. But to be fair, I would probably geek out if I met Barack Obama, so I might call him Shirley Temple. I'd be so excited.
Yeah.
I'd be like, hi, Shirley.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. No, I'd definitely make a tit of myself somehow if I met.
One does when around those big people that you, like, admire.
Yeah, exactly. If you admire them, forget it. I get funny.
It's out the window.
But then sometimes I get really, like, funny about random, like, reality stars.
Do
I get, like, really geeked. Like, I remember I used to watch all the time. I used to watch Dog the Bounty Hunter. Like, random people were like, I wouldn't go up to Brad Pitt if I saw him. But, like, but Dog the Bounty Hunter, I'm like, oh, it's Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Is there anyone you've lost your cool around where you've been like, that wasn't cool?
Most people.
Good.
I think I'm not cool most of the time.
Oh, that's perfect. Okay, we like people who aren't cool.
I think I was a bit with Sting once.
Yeah.
You know, where you're just, like, talking and everything that's coming out of your mouth as you're saying is, oh my God, you sound so stupid. You're so stupid. Stop talking. Stop talking.
Really aware.
And stuff just keeps coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. I do that all the time. All the time. As anyone who's listened to this before will know. You grew up in LA.
I grew up in LA.
To my mind, which is, I've never lived in LA, but in my head, people in LA walk around in shorts and crop tops, kind of like the beginning of Pretty Woman, where Julia Roberts is in that crop top thing.
Yeah. There was a stage where I wore crop tops.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm with you. And in LA, yeah,
and
so
everyone's
true.
Hyper-groomed.
100%.
And it's quite... You wouldn't see someone with, like, you know, broken nails.
No.
Or, like, you know, in my head.
No, your head is
like
correct.
That?
Your
okay.
head is correct. Okay. I mean, I don't think I was super aware of that growing up because, you know, like, as weird of a place as LA is... Mm. Anywhere you grew up as a kid is quite normalized for you because it's all you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I kind of grew up noticing that everyone was really groomed. It wasn't, I think, till I was older that I realized how extra groomed everyone is in LA.
Did that become a part of your childhood thing, though? Like, were you someone who was, I need to get makeup, or I'd like to put makeup on?
You know, I was quite a tomboy for a long period. I would say until there was this weird moment when I was about 15, where I think it was like the summer before, maybe it was 14, I saw Clueless. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what happened to me when I saw Clueless, but all of a sudden I wanted to wear crop tops and high-heeled sneakers and a little backpack.
Who did you want to be? Alicia Silverstone?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I literally went from geek chic. I mean, I was wearing jeans and flannel shirts. Mm-hmm. I had my hair always pulled back. It was like all of a sudden I discovered slutty clothing and makeup and blow-drying my own hair. Because before it was like, why would you blow dry your own hair? You just let it dry.
Yeah.
Whereas, oh no, it became like I would blow dry it. I would put a hot roller in. Yeah. There was lip gloss involved. I mean, and it was like, it was kind of like, not really a sexual revolution because I was completely square and I didn't have a boyfriend or anything. But it was like boys started noticing me.
Yeah.
And I felt like, you know, I was really exploring my looks and, you know, how I felt girly or being attracted to boys. I mean, it was like definitely a shift from being invisible to all of that stuff or blind to all of that stuff to all of a sudden being aware of it.
Yeah, and having people, inviting people to look at you.
Yeah, exactly, which was weird, which was never anything I wanted before or had been on my horizon. But I do remember this very marked point where I didn't care about shopping or anything. And then one day it was like Clueless was out and I was like, I'm going to whatever it was. It wasn't Topshop, but whatever you know, it was like, and that was it. And then from that moment on,
so
it got really expensive.
LA is sprawling and huge. So whereabouts were you?
Kind of Beverly Hills, Bel Air, you know.
So
the,
you could
the
really
rough
walk
streets,
down
the rough
street.
Streets.
Yeah, yeah. And but, did you have like a group of friends who joined you in that mission?
Yeah, of course. We would go, you know, you'd go to the mall back in the day. So you'd go to the Beverly Center or... well, at that point, the gallery is... You go to the Fashion Square or the Beverly Center and you just walk around with your friends. Yeah. You can go to, like, Cinnabon and get, like, a cinnamon roll. And, like, you know, boys would look at you and you'd go shopping. And, like, also that thing of, like, discovering makeup. You know, it was like none of that stuff was... I wasn't that little girl that played with makeup.
Right.
It was like this became... This was, like, a whole new...
So that was your...
Awakening.
Because some people look at their mum or they have an aunt or something. But for you, it was, like, almost, like... Clueless.
It was like Clueless. Yeah. I really was Clueless. I mean, for me, I'd say the biggest influence, hands down for me, was my grandmother. And she was incredibly glamorous.
On your mom's side.
On my mom's side. Mm-hmm. And she lived in Paris. Mm-hmm. And I would watch her get ready. And she always wore her, she wore Yves Saint Laurent Paris, the scent. So whenever I smell that scent, I get taken back. But she always wore the same makeup. She had a red lip she loved, and it was almost like a violet eyeshadow, which is an incredibly difficult combination, I think. But anyway, I would watch her put her makeup on every day, you know. And even to this day, when I put makeup on, I make the same face. She would open her mouth when she would be doing, like, her eyes, or she'd kind of go...
Do you not do that anyway, though? Because when I put mascara on, I always open my mouth. I find it
That's what I do.
Yeah.
But I always open it. And I always used to make fun of her. Now I find myself...
Now you do the same thing.
Now I do the same thing.
Yeah.
But for me, you know, my mom wasn't into makeup. Mm-hmm. It wasn't... And I was such a tomboy. I played sports, you know. So it wasn't... You know, I was more interested in playing outdoors, playing tennis, running, whatever, than makeup. So this Clueless moment... Was a real changing point for sure.
So when you were buying makeup, do you and your first cosmetics, do you remember what you were buying and what you put on your face? Tell
me about
that.
By the way, the first kind of, and I'm trying to remember when it came out, the first kind of, one of the first makeup things that attracted me was I discovered Kevin O'Quinn. And I remember wanting his book for Christmas, his makeup.
Face Forward.
Yes, with all the looks and being just like blown away. I don't know why. I just, and he was revolutionary. He was doing all the models and he did all these incredible looks. And it was just like, wow, you can do this with makeup? Because it was just like, you know, like people have like a music revolution. That was my makeup revolution. Yeah. And I think the first things I started to wear, I mean, it was very simple for me, but I think... Mm. I really loved Estilla. You remember those lip glosses where you twist them, the glazes?
Yes.
Super into the glazes.
Do you remember what color you have by any chance?
I had a peach for sure, that pale peach, and a watermelon.
Yes.
But I might be getting that confused with the Juicy Tubes, which was the next frontier.
I mean, I had you and I had the same thing.
I had sticky lips for about 15 years.
Did you find that your hair would blow in it?
It would blow and get stuck, and then you'd pull your hair out. It would like smear under your cheek.
And also, when you saw people in films or music videos with glossy lips and their hair was amazing, that, like, for me, it was Britney Spears. I always reference her.
Yeah.
And I used to walk down the street. Again, nowhere to be. You know, you're a teenager. Where are you
where
going?
Where am I going?
Yeah.
The mall.
Glossy lips. And then your hair would blow in it, and you'd be like, this is not what happened in the video.
Exactly. You'd always be like, not the wind, not the wind. I remember the lip glass. Do you remember Max lip glass? That was dangerous, man. That was like, you might as well be sticking wet concrete on your face because anything got stuck in there, and it was like glop afterwards.
Yeah.
But like those were the...
The moment.
Those were the moments. It was very a lip gloss heavy game at that point. I don't think I messed around too much. I mean, I think there was a little Urban Decay, like eyeshadow happening.
Because I think of you as a really eyeshadow person now.
Now, I am.
You weren't then.
I was so basic with my makeup. Right. I was into it, but I was, you know, there was a little bit of a, I remember I used to wear Max Spice, the lip liner.
Oh.
Max Spice.
90s classic.
90s classic. I had all the 90s classics.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe some like overly brick tone for a blush. But
did you pluck your eyebrows?
No.
Clever.
Do you know what? Because my mother, she got electrolysis when she was in the 80s. That was the big... And she over, you know, plucked them, thinned them. And now she's got really... And she was like, never do that.
Oh.
So I always had thick eyebrows and I kept them thick.
Yeah.
I kept them thick. I still keep them thick.
No, they're great brows.
I mean, they're a little unruly sometimes.
But nice.
But you have a good brow.
I have unruly brows. I plucked them all off though. I had to grow all of my back. It was a nightmare.
No, that's the thing, because sometimes they don't grow back.
I've heard
nightmare stories.
But the thing is, like, my hair persists throughout anything. So it's
you've got a strong force.
It will always grow back.
It will always grow back.
Yeah,
You're very lucky.
Yeah.
My mom literally is like a bald eagle.
Yeah.
She has to, like, pencil it in. Oh. God bless her. Do you know what? I think that's one of the biggest beauty secrets is spending the time on the brow.
I completely agree.
The brow and the skin.
That's why there's been this brow suddenly renaissance. Everyone's obsessed with it. Tell me, when you were a teenager, how was your skin?
Do you know what? I was really lucky. I had good skin. My brother did not, but I had really good skin.
Fine.
I did not suffer with any kind of acne or...
So did you wear foundation or tan, in fact? What were you doing to your skin?
Tanning.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, that was before spray tans were like... Because in the 90s, we didn't really have...
So you're quite healthily brown now. Is that a spray tan now?
Oh, that's a spray tan.
Okay, fine. So that's not your natural hue.
I'm naturally very dark.
Right.
But in order to be dark, I have to lay out in the sun.
So you're kind of olive-toned and you
I'm
tan.
Olive-toned and I tan very, very easily.
Yeah.
This is the palest I've been in my life since I've entered my 30s.
Right.
Like mid-30s onward. Now,
The
palest I've been, because all of a sudden you realize all that tanning you did is going to make you look old later. So you start to get the breaks, and you're like,
I always think of Magda in
Talking
About Mary.
That's what I mean, that
leathery.
Like wrinkly, leathery.
Yeah.
So I think like you start doing really mundane things like going to the dermatologist in your 30s, and they warn you off. So now I wear like before, I used to put Crisco oil on my body. I used to do tanning beds.
Yes.
I mean, like literally nothing.
Yeah.
The factor, it would be factor 4, and if I really wanted extra protection, 8.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? Now I'm that person that's splodging 50 on my face, even on an overcast day, just to step outside for 5 minutes.
Yeah. What kind of teenager were you? If I would say to you when you were 16, tell me what you're going to do for a living. What's your life going to be like? Are you going to live in LA? What would you have said to me?
At 16, I would have said, I'm going to be an international tax attorney. Mm-hmm. I am not going to live in LA. I'm going to live in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I was really boring as a teenager in terms of I did not rebel.
Mm-hmm.
I was super square. I was a super student. I did nothing wrong, which I look back on it. I think, I should have been a bit naughtier. I should have gotten that out of my system.
But I also was a bit of a square.
Were you square too?
Oh my God, like such a loser.
Like I was such a loser. I was such, like my brother was like Ferris Bueller rock and roll. Like, my brother and I, let me just say something. I'm not going to give ages, but he's 7.5 years younger than me.
Okay.
And we almost lost our virginity at the exact same time.
Yeah.
I had this real, real perfectionism, good girl, square, you know, wanted to be. And by the way, my parents were not putting that on me. Mm. That was completely self-inflicted.
Do you think it's because you were ambitious, or do you think it's because you were fearful, or was it neither?
Or both. I think it might have been both. I was highly ambitious. Yeah. I really, you know, it was like I grew up in LA where being an actor was so cliche because, you know, every waiter was an actor, every parking attendant was an actor. You know, everyone came to LA to be an actor.
Yeah.
So for me, and I watched my parents, you know, my mom was in the film industry, my stepdad was in the film industry, and they struggled. You know, it wasn't like they weren't Steven Spielberg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just did not, I was so afraid of having that lifestyle
or
being that cliche or having all this education and still, you know, struggling to make the rent.
Yeah.
You know, that I was like, that's it. I'm not going to do that. My uncle was an international tax attorney. He lived in Europe. It was like, I'm great with languages. I love Europe. I'm smart.
Yeah.
Let me set my life up straight where I know I'm covered.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that, I mean, that's kind of a fear-based and ambitious kind of, you know, I wanted to do well and I didn't want unpredictability. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted everything to be safe.
So how did you end up becoming an actress then?
Oh, God. I mean, God, that was a weird turn. I mean, I always wanted to be an actor, but I was too afraid. I just thought it was like the worst job you could ever pick. It was like complete loserville. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because everyone, as I said, everyone was an actor. It was like everyone was like an actor / model / singer / you know what I mean? You're like, oh,
yeah.
You know, and I was just like, I can do better than that. I'm good at school. I can do something with myself. You know, by golly.
Yeah.
And
I've got gumption. Yeah.
And I can pull this off. So my grandmother was my everything. And as I said, she lived in Paris my whole life. And I was on this track to be, you know, international tax attorney. I was studying poli-sci econ.
Like, very serious.
Very Geeksville stuff. And when I was studying abroad in Paris, she had just passed away the year before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very weird being in her city without her. It was a very lonely time for it. I was really depressed.
Did you go there on a holiday or?
No, I was studying. Sorry, I was studying abroad.
Right, gotcha.
So I was doing, you know, my studies abroad and for my international tax attorney situation.
Very serious job.
Very serious job that I was going to do. And I remember walking the streets of Paris, being really sad, thinking about my grandmother.
Yeah.
And in this visual, I was watching, I was in the movies and I was 40. Because to me, that was the marker of like
old age.
Which is really frightening. And I was at the movies and I was a lawyer and I was watching movies and I was sad because I was thinking, oh, that could have been me.
Yeah.
And there was this weird thing that happened where I thought, wow, Mimi would be so sad to know that I was so afraid of my dreams that before I even begun, I stopped. And I just had this real moment of, I just felt incredibly connected to her. It was like she was talking to me and she'd be the one person in my corner really pushing me to go for my dreams. And here I was so afraid of them that I wasn't even going to try. And I felt this overwhelming sense of regret and disappointment. And at that moment, I just decided I was going to try.
Right.
And that was really scary. Because nobody, you know, I grew up in an environment, even though my parents were in the film industry, and I said they were in the independent films, they struggled. You know, it was like, we can go to dinner, we can go on vacation, we can't.
Yeah.
You know, we can't afford food. You know, well, not afford food, that's very dramatic, but you know, we can't afford, you know what your friends are doing?
Yeah.
We can't afford to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But all my friends, you know, all their parents were in traditional professions.
Mm-hmm.
And my friends, all from high school, are in traditional professions. So it was a very kind of, not to say avant-garde, but from where I came from, a very academic background, no one was just throwing it away and going, you know, forget it, I'll pursue the arts.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to kind of, I had this, you know, I was top of my class. For me to be down this lane where I was guaranteed, you know, success and security and to just throw that away and go, do you know what, all those things I've been working hard for, all those things I valued actually don't mean anything to me. It was a big, you know, I was...
But
20 at the time.
Two things. Firstly, great to have that so young in your life instead of coming to that later and thinking you've got to turn it around. And also, I think that sounds like the best possible thing you can do with grief is to remember what someone was about.
I never thought of it like that.
And put that in you.
I definitely feel her. I mean, to this day, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about her.
Yeah.
And I feel her in so many decisions in my life and... Yeah, decisions in my life. She does guide me. You know, she had an incredible amount of integrity. you know, she's incredibly clever and passionate, and she had, you know, a joie de vivre that was off the scale. And I think that's been one of the biggest things for me in my life is carrying her with me and helping her. You know, I lead with my
heart. She sounds wonderful.
She was amazing. Yeah. She's amazing.
So going into acting then, I can't get away in my head from the relationship between acting and the way you look. I wish that weren't the case. But if I were going into acting now, I would think I probably should go to the gym a little bit more. do I need to colour my grey hairs? I mean, I know that you went to it younger, but you know what I mean?
Oh, there was huge amounts of pressure to look good. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember a manager once, you know, because I was very lucky. I got, and it was a whole kind of very funny story, but I got on a soap opera within, gosh, a month or two of being in LA.
Soap opera was that?
Days of Our Lives.
That
and which,
me.
By the way, was the soap that my grandmother used to watch.
Was it?
So I was like...
Thrilling.
It was thrilling. I mean, there was definitely that bittersweet thing where I thought, I wish she was here to see this. Because I just remember the, like, sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives. You know, so when I got on it, I was like, oh my God, I'm on my grandmother's show. But anyway, but I remember at that time, so I was on a show and I got a manager, and I remember he was like... Because at the time, I wasn't, you know, I'd gone from playing sports to not playing sports. Mm-hmm. And I was eating the same as if I was playing sports.
Yeah.
And I put on, oh my God, I put on so much weight in college. Mm-hmm. Just like, and you know, and I was sad and I was living in Paris and just eating baguettes and crepes all day long.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember he was like, you could lose 5 pounds. And no one had ever told me that before. Because in high school, I was super, you know, super active, very thin.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm naturally...
So the way... So your body wasn't something you even thought about
at
that
point. No, I never thought of my body. I mean, I was very lucky to be in a situation where I'd never had to think about my body that way.
Yeah.
And I was always into sports and it just wasn't on my radar. And this was the first time. And I remember kind of in that same period of time, it would have been the same year, I was in Cannes with my mom and we were... I don't know. She was with some random that we'd met at lunch or she was having, I don't even know. We were crossing the street and he was like, you'd be perfect if you lost 7 pounds. And I remember thinking that was the rudest, most horrible thing. I was heavier than I am now, but I was by no means
did that hurt you?
Of course. I mean, it got me so sad.
Because that's awful.
It was awful. I don't know how he thought that was like a beneficial, nice.
Did you say anything back at the time?
No, I don't. I just cried.
Yeah.
Do you know what I cried on the... I remember I was at the end of the Croisette and I just... But also, you know, it was this thing where I had gotten... I think I'd put on like 3 stone in college.
Okay.
So quite a, you know, from a very thin girl to kind of a curvier.
Yeah.
And it was not healthy. I was sad eating. You know,
right.
I was eating like a tin of cookies every day and blocks of cheese. You know, things...
I'm the same. If I've put on... Sometimes people say, oh, you've put on weight because you're happy. For me, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
If I've put on weight, it's because I'm
sad.
Eating.
It was sad weight.
Yeah.
I mean,
it
was a horrible, you know, it was a horrible thing to say. I mean, luckily it didn't trigger anything.
No.
But I definitely, at one point, you know, I realized with, you know, because I had been such an athletic person, I realized that, you know, as an actor, you have very little control on what jobs you get, what jobs you don't get, you know, blah, blah. But what I did have control of was how I took care of myself.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? I decided kind of at a certain point that I wasn't going to lose out on a job because I wasn't taking care of myself. Now, that didn't mean being a certain size for creep A or creep B, but it meant taking care of myself. And also it gave me some structure. You know what I mean? Because an actor, you could just, you know, you're your own employer. So you can just loaf around all day if you want. There's no one to yell at you. But you know what? It was like my mom was always fit. And, you know, God bless her. I said, I've signed us both up for Barry's boot camp. Will you go with me? Because I was afraid because it's been so long since I...
Yeah.
And that was a real turning point for me because I got really into it. And I kind of... And that gave me a confidence about kind of getting back in touch with who I was. And, you know, because I was an athlete.
Yeah.
And then, you know, gosh, it probably took a year and a half for the weight to kind of slowly fall off. And, you know that thing was you get healthier. Eventually you start making healthier choices anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I still, you know, to this day, I eat naughty foods all the time.
Are you quite a big exerciser in terms of the high impact exercise? For you, is yoga hard or do you do them both?
I do them both. I think it's important, you know, especially as I get older, you know, I used to kind of think back in the Barry's boot camp days, I used to think the more you beat yourself up, the better, the more intense, the tougher. I don't really think that anymore. You know, I think there's a great adrenaline rush from that. But I actually think the best thing for your body is probably Pilates and yoga and connecting with a more centered spiritual side. And also, I don't think that your body, as you get older, really enjoys being punished. I think the stretching and the strengthening is kind of like where your longevity ends up. Because I see a lot of people who are overdeveloped and curled in, especially guys, they don't do any kind of counter stretching or counter strengthening, and their shoulders are rolled forward and their traps are up to their ears and they're locked in here and their hamstrings are tight.
Yeah.
And they end up with all sorts of problems too. So I think there's got to be a certain level or a large degree of mindfulness in movement.
Don't you also think, though, that being happy in your body kind of 100% stretches to other things?
100%. As I get older, you know, and I think that's one of the best things about getting older is just being more relaxed with yourself, more accepting of yourself, more at peace with where you're at and loving yourself more and understanding that other things are more important. You know, like when you're in your 20s, God, it's such a confusing time and you're just really trying to find your way and be this adult that you don't know what it means, but you have to be it all of a sudden out of nowhere.
I think also to some extent when you're young, you're almost picking adults from archetypes.
Yes,
like
exactly.
You're like, if I'm a tax attorney, I'll wear a pencil skirt
totally.
And heels. And if I'm like, an actress, I'll
exactly. Yeah. And by the way, when I was in my 20s, I was fully wearing day heels all the time because I was trying to be a grown-up.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm like, I mean, I'm wearing heels right now, but I'm flats, I'm trainers. I'm like, wait, I don't have to prove I'm an adult because I am it. Yeah.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You started in your late 20s dating a Brit.
I did.
You did. And then you spent more time in England.
I mean, basically, let me say, I was 27 when I met Rob. And then he pretty much kidnapped me back to the UK. I was, let's see, I was 28 and a half, 29.
Okay.
And from that moment on, I've pretty much been Brit side.
Right. So then I'm wondering, for someone who spent so much time in LA and very immersed in the LA world, then you come to the UK where it's, you know, fish
freezing
and chips,
cold.
Freezing cold, you know, not very glamorous, I wouldn't say, on the whole. How did you find that shift and what were the things you observed?
Do you know what? For me, I think my uncle, who was the international tax attorney, lived in England my whole life. He lived in London. And my grandmother lived in Paris my whole life. So I've always felt very kind of Euro-centered, Francophile. Yeah. I've never felt super American. And and that's the same with my mom. You know, we speak French. We kind of secretly want to live in France.
Was your grandma French?
No. She was, God, she was born in New York. She was, on her side, her parents were from Latvia and Lithuania. But her mother was a fashion designer. And so she would go to Europe to copy the fashion designs and then produce them here. And so she became, so my grandmother spent all her summers in France, you know, which back in whatever, 1925 was a big deal, you know. And so she grew up with a love affair of French. She spoke French. You know, we've always been very European, my family. And my family's always been in Europe. So I think it kind of made sense that I ended up with a European.
But my parents are both European. My mum's Austrian, my dad's Hungarian.
Oh, you also got some. So my grandfather, his parents, he's from Hungary.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That's Hungarian where you get
some of the darkness from.
Yeah.
But the thing is, yes, England is Europe, technically, currently.
But For now.
For the next
On the continent of.
But I do feel like there's quite a cultural difference between Europe. I think Europe feels
more European.
More European. England feels quite random. Like there are a lot of random things.
I kind of like that though.
You do.
It's a bit, it's a bit like higgledy-piggledy, random, weird, eccentric.
Yeah.
You know, nooks and crannies. I think I'm a bit of a weirdo.
Okay.
So, and I, you know, I'm definitely not inside the box. Though I was super, super duper square, I've always had a really cheeky, dry sense of humor, which has always gone over most people's heads in America.
You're fine then.
Yeah. So I think it was like finding my people. When I met Rob, it was like it was like connecting with the mothership. It was like he had the exact same sense of humor as I did. I'd never met anyone like that. I did have to get used to the cold. That I still struggle with.
It's not great, is it?
It's not my favorite. No. And the grey.
Yeah.
Everything else I really like.
I don't mind the cold. In my head, when I imagine winter now,
yeah,
it's beautiful and crisp. But then when it gets to it, it's just
damp
flat.
And grey and flat.
Yeah.
I don't mind a beautiful winter's day where the sky is blue.
No.
But those aren't very often here.
No. It's not like it's Salzburg drippy. Or like...
And by the way, it's like still like that in May and June.
I know.
There's so many birthdays I've spent here where it, literally the clouds
when
are sitting
born?
Up.
May.
May 17th.
Right, okay.
They're sat on my head with like filled with sadness and tears.
Yeah, because I think people like from America who haven't been to the UK imagine that we're all in a P.G. Woodhouse novel, like sitting outside like a spring
postman
sprung.
Pat.
No.
Like, by the way, it's really annoying too because whenever my friends have come to visit, it's been good weather. And I'm like, no, this is not.
I promise
how it
it's
is.
Crap.
I promise it's grim.
Yeah.
But but I love it here. I really do.
And that relationship really thrust you into the public eye, which I suppose you were before. But I mean, different. Scale.
I mean, you know, when I was in the public eye. In the States, it was really just in the States and on the shows that I was on and those that watched those shows. It wasn't like a global situation.
That's what I mean. How challenging is that on a day-to-day basis?
I think when I'm here, it's different than when I'm in L.A. Okay. When I'm in L.A., it's less intense because, Rob doesn't really work in the States. You know, when we lead a very, you know, I say normal. It's normal for us. Very normal, kind of undisturbed existence.
And LA's fairly populated.
And
with
LA's got lots of really fabulously impressive people, and people. People are a bit more kind of used to other people. You could see Tom Cruise or you can see Will Smith, and it wouldn't be like
a big deal.
You'd still go, oh, it's Will Smith.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't, you know, people don't like freak
scream
out.
And run.
And especially not for Rob, who doesn't do much in the States.
Right.
We kind of, you know, we're easy.
But you walk down the streets.
Here it's a little different. It's a little different here. I mean, sometimes it's hard and sometimes it's not.
Right.
You know, I think the hard part is really, for me, I'm pretty cool. Like, I can still go about my stuff and there's not much of an issue. Mm-hmm. And everyone's usually really nice and... I really enjoy when people are nice, and nice fans always make me happy. And you know, that's a nice thing.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's hard for Rob because it's been so long for him. Like, it's only moments when he feels like he's with our kids and there's people taking photos and he gets uncomfortable, you know, because he doesn't want anyone taking pictures of them.
Yeah.
You know, moments where, or he might not go somewhere because he's worried. You know, that there'll be so much focus on him that, you know, and by the way, he's so happy when he meets nice fans. But it's just a different, you know, there's certain
things. It's a different
things,
life almost.
Yeah, it's a different life. There's certain things we probably wouldn't do just because, it'll just be too chaotic.
Gotcha.
And we won't do that.
So you have to sort of navigate your day.
We navigate it more. Yeah. We navigate it.
Three children.
Yeah. Whoa. How did that happen? Whoa. I was looking, my friend sent me a picture the other day, and it was when I was pregnant with Teddy. And I was like, oh my God. Because I don't really see a difference. And I was like, I look so young there. And I was like, what happened? And I was like, oh, I've had three kids. There's like no difference between me and my like 20s and me and like 32 in pictures. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden there's this drop off from like 32 to now.
Did you feel that in your body though? Because it sounds like you're someone who has had a very good relationship with your body.
Yeah.
You know, you were sporty.
Yeah.
You put on a bit of weight, sad. You lost it in a very sensible way.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you have kids. And I know from my friends who've had kids that suddenly your body changes
totally.
In really unexpected ways.
Totally.
I
don't think I was prepared for that because, as I said, I've never been anyone that's had to be super concerned with my body in terms of, you know, as I said, I'm an athletic and I'm trim. So I kind of just thought, because when you get pregnant for the first time, you think, oh, well, I'll gain some weight and then I'll lose some weight.
Yeah.
That's just what will happen. And I didn't realize that even if you lose the weight, that it doesn't look the same still afterwards. So I think that was a bit of, well, first of all, I was one of those people, everyone's like, oh, you'll just snap right back. You know, on my first one, it was like I had Teddy and I was like, why are there still 15 pounds here? Like, where's Snap?
Yeah.
Snap. And they just hung around for a bit. And that was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I didn't plan on that.
No.
I don't want to have to work to get this off. And I kind of all of a sudden understood how people could not lose the baby weight.
Yeah.
Because it just, there's just like 15 pounds. And if you get pregnant again without losing that 15 pounds,
yeah.
then you've got that 30 pounds. That's, you know.
And also you're busy when you've had
and
babies.
And you're busy, so especially like, with the second one. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I did find, I do wish, had I known what was going to happen, that I'd had like a going away party for my stomach. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because that's never been the same. And like, it doesn't matter if I'm the same weight, the stomach does not look
different.
The same. It's different. Yeah. And there's just like, there's skin there, man. Yeah, that just, like I was.
But you're smiling when you say that, so it doesn't bother you.
It doesn't keep me up at night. I mean, listen, do I wish my stomach was back to how it was? 100%. Would I like it to be that? Yes. Do I hold it in dresses together? Like, Rob always laughs at me. I'm like, it used to be like this.
Yeah.
But no, it doesn't, you know, keep me up at night.
It's fine.
I look at my beautiful kids and I feel so grateful to have these amazing beings.
So, Robbie live tweeted your first.
No, my second. That was
second.
Charlie. That was Charlie.
Okay, fine. I thought it was your first. Sorry.
First one
okay.
I had here.
So, Boy Charlie.
Number two. I think with Rob and I, first of all, we're both big kids. Mm-hmm. We both are verbal diarrhea people. We lead with our hearts. So nothing's ever super planned with us. So it's not like the live tweeting was a planned situation.
Right, okay.
And nor was I thinking about it being a live tweet. It was more like, we're making funny videos giving birth to kind of distract me.
It was the first time I'd heard live tweeting. I was like is all tweeting live?
I was like, is that what we did? I didn't even know we did that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have plenty of embarrassing moments. We have plenty of completely vulnerable moments. Mm-hmm. It's not really ever planned out. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we're both in charge of, in particular me, our social media. I do all my, you know, all my Instagrams, me doing it.
Wow.
And that's kind of because that's what I want to give. I like that connection. And I've got some really nice fans. Mm-hmm. And I like that dialogue.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to be any other way. Like, I could never be super manicured or... Mm. I just think, the only way we know how to be is accessible. But there are some challenges that come with that. And there are boundaries that you have to, you know, like for my kids, I don't ever show their faces.
Fine.
Because, you know, if you show their faces on your social media, that means the press can print their faces, take mm-hmm. pictures of them and mm-hmm. blast. And I don't want people I don't know knowing what my kids look like.
Yeah.
And, you know, assigning them with personality traits or giving them a narrative that isn't theirs. You know, it's like they're too young for that and they have no say in that.
I want them to
make their own choice and have a say in it. You know, so that's kind of a protection thing. And obviously Rob and I don't, you know, talk about everything on social media or interviews. Yeah. You know, but sometimes Rob will say stuff and he'll be like, my friend will call me and go, Rob said this thing, and I'm like, huh? And I'll look up this article and I'll just smack Rob on the shoulder going, what did you do? Where are you?
I think that's enormously endearing, though. I think it's much better that way than the, you know, uber polished. I mean,
we're definitely not uber polished.
No, I don't have to live it, but I think that as someone who watches it, it's so much more endearing.
Yeah.
Do you switch off your phone at night?
The only rule I have, like, phone wise, is there's no phones at the dinner table with the kids.
Good rule.
And I'm not really on my phone. I mean, Rob makes fun of me for being on my phone, but I'm really not on my phone very much. Like at night, you know, like I used to be notoriously bad at even getting back to people or having my phone around me because there was like a year and a half Rob to this day does not have a cell phone.
What?
And I went for about a year and a half without having a cell phone. So I'm not a real phone
person. In
the modern day.
That's insane.
Isn't that weird? We're like pilgrims.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Rob has... There's always someone with Rob.
Fine.
He has security.
Fine.
So there's always a way to get to him. And at one point when we moved to the countryside, because when he kind of took me away from my, you know, American career and plopped me down into the UK, we were living in the countryside full time. So I was just hanging out with cows and going through stiles in the countryside.
That is like a P.G. Woodhouse
it
novel.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. We were like, even in the winter, we'd be wearing these like ski suits just walking.
Amazing.
But we didn't have phones.
Yeah.
You know, and people would just... get to me via security and it was very bohemian.
Yeah.
So I'm not addicted to my phone.
Okay.
I do my social media and I try and get back to some of the people who write in because I really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, no. I can go down Instagram holes sometimes, but I'm not any good girl.
Yeah.
But I'm not a huge phone person.
Okay, but then talk to me about the things. So you live a busy life in any case. Even if you're not on your phone loads, you are busy. You have children.
Busy.
Tell me what you do that when it feels overwhelming and when you think, oh, I'm just at the edge a little bit. What do you do? What pulls you back?
Well, different things. It depends. Like sometimes a workout for me will ground me down.
Mm-hmm.
A meditation. I have a book and I'll just do a 5-minute, not even like a kumbaya thing or even if I just breathe for 1 minute.
Right.
Sometimes I'll gently weep. I mean, there's definitely.
Just get it out.
Just get it out. It depends what it is, but I definitely take moments for myself. For me, the working out is a real nice way mm-hmm. to have some me time where phone's not with me, mm-hmm. kids, husband, you know, check, they're taken care of, yeah. and I can just, because you're working so hard in the moment, you know, that's why yoga is so great. It's just like connecting to your breath.
What workouts do you do now, though, if you're traveling?
I mean, I will mix it up. I'll do whatever I, like, I'll do whatever's near me.
Yeah, do you do YouTube stuff, though, or do you, are you quite good at teaching yourself?
I'm quite good at teaching myself, okay. but I'll do, like, I have a DVD on my computer, so if there's mm-hmm. no gym, there's no anything, I can do something in my room.
Great.
I don't need any equipment, just me. Mm-hmm. When I was in Vegas recently, I really got into, I just started asking locals what's a great yoga studio, mm-hmm. went to the yoga studio, did some spinning because I had a soul cycle.
Yep.
Here, since I've got here, I'm close to a berry, so mm-hmm. I'm recircling that territory.
Good. Yeah.
And I went to Soul Cycle the other day.
Yeah.
So I'll just kind of do whatever. Like, if I, you know, when you do a beach vacation, I'll literally use seashells and the sand and sticks, like Robinson Crusoe, and just do, like, and I'll invite anyone who's on the island. Like, we had some people nice. Staying next to us, and I just started a boot camp with everyone that was staying with us. On vacation, you know, you're eating a lot and drinking a lot, and you can feel so awful at the end of vacation. And so it's a really nice way to, like, you do that in the morning, mm-hmm. and then you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And then you still end up feeling kind of great.
That I go up to this place once a year.
Oh, Viva Maya. I've never done one of those. I don't know if I could do it. It's so hardcore.
I didn't think I could do it, but it changed my life. I felt about eight
Did
years
it?
Old when I left.
Really?
I've never had so much
That's
energy.
That's so funny. I was just talking to someone who was going with someone there.
Yeah.
Like a celebrity. I think it was Rumor Wilson. She was going with Rumor Wilson.
Yeah.
To the one in Austria.
Yes. I go on about it a lot, and I've spoken about it before on this, but it is absolutely incredible. So I find that my holidays where I go and eat loads, I then am like,
you have to
dreaming
do
of going on
well,
the
Well, this is why
holiday.
On the holiday, listen, by the way, there are also lots of days where I'm like today I didn't work out.
Yeah.
I'm not working out.
Yeah.
You know, like self-care comes mm-hmm. in so many different forms. Mm-hmm. You just have to make sure you do it,
mm-hmm.
whether it's checking in with yourself and breathing for a minute, whether it's doing a workout class, whether it's not doing a workout class,
yep.
eating something healthy, eating something naughty.
I'm glad you said not doing a workout class, because sometimes that is better for
yeah.
you than pushing yourself to do it.
100%. If your body's telling you, I'm really tired, I need this sleep, I need rest, I'm mm-hmm. sore, you've got to listen to that.
Completely.
That's important.
If I were to walk into your house now, your house in England,
okay,
and look around your bathroom and your cosmetic stash, mm-hmm. what would I find? What would always be there?
You would always find a Moravitza products,
mm-hmm.
And usually a night oil, because I'm addicted to night oil.
Mm-hmm. Are there any particular Moravitza stuff that you like?
I love the Blue Diamond.
Yes.
I love the Blue Diamond stuff.
Yeah.
And their night oil. And when I like their charcoal, their...
the cleanser.
The cleansing balm.
Gorgeous.
I have my perfume that is called B683, which is a Marc Antoine Barrois. Which
don't
I like.
Know it.
Don't know it.
Okay.
But also, I'm a big Le Labo fan.
Okay.
So you'll find different Le Labo scents for different moods, because I think it's nice to change.
Jeff Santel 33.
Of course.
Everyone has that.
I think that's my Charlie scent. It's like sometimes with the kids, if I'm like working, I like to have a scent that reminds me of the kids. So like for Charlie, he's my Santel.
Okay.
Teddy is another Rose, because she's Theodore Rose.
Mm-hmm.
And Coco, who's Colette, is another 13.
Mm-hmm.
Rose 31, another 13. Because that was the signature scent at Colette. So you'd find Le Labo.
Mm.
You'd find Moravitza.
Mm.
I also like the Dr. Sabag rose oil as well.
Nice.
You
like
rose oil.
Like moisturizing.
I love a really... Yeah. I think I tend to be dry.
Yeah.
You'd always find a virgin coconut oil. That's what I moisturize with.
On your body?
On my body is a virgin coconut oil.
Okay. Any brand in particular, or just any?
Oh, God. I can picture the sticker. It's Dr. Brown's, I think it's called.
Okay.
Virgin coconut oil. I'll put that on my face.
You
should
go and get it from
lips.
Planet Organic. Or
exactly. Or Whole Foods.
Yeah.
Let's see.
What about makeup?
Makeup, you'll find Burberry.
Mm-hmm.
Burberry, Tom Ford,
mm-hmm.
and Charlotte Tilbury are my big...
Good choices.
I mean, I think, like, Burberry for a natural, kind of simple,
mm-hmm.
pretty look, you know, just to keep it simple. I think Charlotte Tilbury is my go-out glam look.
What's your go-to lipstick?
I love a Tom Ford lipstick.
Yeah.
And I like a Charlotte Tilbury lipstick.
Yeah. Both do great colors.
Both do great colors.
In terms of now your holistic sort of wellness, are you someone who has a bath? Are you someone who...
a bath person.
Okay.
I'm a super duper... I'll throw a bath salt in. I'll throw an oil.
Yeah.
I've definitely gotten more... natural with my products too, mm-hmm. as I've gotten, you know, I like things that I don't have parabens, and even my shampoo and conditioner is like sulfate free.
Is it?
Yeah.
Which one do you use?
Well, I have one from LA from my dermatologist. It's called, mm-hmm. I can't remember what it's called, like Elon. There's one I'm trying called John Masters or something.
And John Masters is great.
I think that's kind of important.
So in terms of then, you've mentioned your dermatologist, but in terms of like places you groom, is there anywhere that you're like, if your friends came to London and said, I just look crap, where should I go? Would you say this place, that place, that place?
Well, in LA, I've got my like routine thing. I would say in London, I have a wonderful facialist named Katina, who's mm-hmm. just, I mean, she's, I don't know how,
Katina.
What, Katina. She's amazing.
Okay.
She's amazing. Brows I usually do in LA. This one named, it's at Strike, mm-hmm. Strike Cosmetic, Christy Stryker. They like a cow shed massage.
Nice.
Any kind of cow shed treatment mm-hmm. always makes me feel really, mm-hmm. really happy. The best facial I've had here is Sarah Chapman.
Nice. Yeah.
Best facial.
Yeah. Love Sarah Chapman facial.
So Sarah Chapman, if you need a facial, Sarah mm-hmm. Chapman.
Fine. What's and hair?
Hair, I would say, is it John Wood that I go to?
Josh Wood.
Josh Wood.
Excellent.
Josh Wood.
Josh Wood.
He does my hair color here.
Okay.
I don't know why. It's been a while. It's
yeah,
been
no,
a
no, no, no. I know.
Josh Wood is where I go for hair.
I know, I'm
hair.
Putting you on the spot here.
Josh Wood is where I would go to a salon for hair.
Fine. And waxing?
Waxing, I would have probably Perfect 10 come over and wax me.
They come and help
they
you.
They come and
yeah.
just do
is there
everything.
Anything else you do? Tan.
Tan, Perfect 10. Also, fine. I have the most amazing woman named Moya who will come and do tans.
Moya's
amazing.
She like,
has her own.
I'm like, gonna book her now. Your color's amazing.
No, she's amazing.
Yeah.
She's, and Perfect 10. I mean, both.
Yeah.
I mean, and I like a fake bake or a Sienna X.
Yeah, yeah. So you like people to come around. That's quite handy as well.
Yeah. I mean, by the way, I'm lucky that I can, but, you know, I used to do the Mystic Tans in the booths.
No, but it's so easy to get people around.
It's so easy to get
people. It's easy.
And also with me, with my hours, it's like I usually have to do this stuff at like 11 p.m.
Yeah.
And most places aren't open. Like I have to get my nails done at 11 p.m.
Yeah. Have you ever had one of those massages at home, though, where they massage you and then you just roll into bed?
Yeah, that's the best.
I mean, it's the dream.
I did that when I landed here. I was like, I'm out.
That's amazing. Right. Final three questions I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
These aren't specifically related to beauty, though.
Okay. I like the beauty questions, though.
I know, I love the beauty questions.
Let's keep
but
going.
I'm
like, fine.
No, you're like me. You could chat about it all day.
I could. I love a product.
I mean, I'm being strict now.
Okay, be strict. Go ahead.
What, to your mind, has been your greatest triumph, career or personal?
I mean, by far, personal is the most important thing to me in terms of my greatest achievement, I think, is having a beautiful family and a loving mm-hmm. relationship. You know, I come from a divorced family, and I just sit in gratitude that I have such amazing children and an amazing partner. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest triumph is being happy. You know, like that's just, wow. I never thought I was going to have this amazing life where I got to be in love and be mm-hmm. a mommy. I mean, that wasn't the background I came from. And there were definitely times and horrible relationships and moments that I thought I'll be alone and I won't have that. And, you know, and I sit and I, you know, just before I came here, it was like I was in bed with all my kids and my hubby and we were watching cartoons. Aww. And I just feel so blessed. So personal, way over any kind of career achievement. And I think on the career front, I just think the biggest achievement is really just following my dreams mm-hmm. because there was a moment in time where I wasn't going to follow my dreams and I was really scared to. So I feel really blessed to do a job that I love, you know, get to be happy because a lot of people don't get that choice or that opportunity to follow their dreams or do what they love. And mm-hmm. I feel really blessed to do that. My family, being a mommy is everything to me.
Yeah.
And being a daughter to my mm-hmm. mother and mm-hmm. my wife to my husband. And, you know, the fact that I get to do career stuff on top of that is...
It's a day-to-day joy, though, isn't
it's
it? Rather
day-to-day.
Than, like, thinking
it's not,
that's the benchmark. It's like you enjoy your life.
I enjoy my life, and I'm incredibly grateful that I enjoy my life so much and that I have so much love in my life and joy. So that's just wow.
What one piece of advice would you give to your younger self?
Ooh, that's a good one. I would say it's okay, you're safe.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe chill out on the perfectionism, because it doesn't matter that much.
Maybe go and have a one-night stand.
Maybe go have a reckless shag.
Yeah.
That's what I tell myself. But no. Use protection.
Obviously. Always.
Always.
Always. Name three people, dead or alive, who you'd like to have dinner with and tell us why.
Oh, okay. Well, the first person on my list would have to be my grandmother, because I just love to see her one more time. And I'd love to just have any kind of moment with her where mm-hmm. I could tell her about my life and she could meet my kids. And yeah, I'd love, she'd be head guest at that dinner party. And then I definitely have to have ABBA there.
Which
like,
one?
All of them.
So they're all like huddled on one chair.
They're all huddled on one chair. Singing. It's a big chair. Singing. Because I feel like we should have a karaoke. If we have enough wine, then I think it should lead to karaoke.
What would they be singing? What's your favorite ABBA song?
I mean, Dancing Queen. I think my grandmother and I would get up, you know, and she loved ABBA. So I feel like they'd have to be there. Maybe not Fine. In a guest capacity, mm-hmm. but on a performance capacity. So yeah. we just have one big sing.
You're going big with this dinner party.
I feel like the dinner party, it's got to be big, right?
Suddenly ABBA singing, right?
Right.
Okay.
I mean, I'm throwing an event. Fine. If I'm bringing people back from the dead, Fine. It's got to be an event.
Fine. So let's give you two more seats.
Okay,
then.
Okay.
You've
okay.
just gone with ABBA as
Okay,
orchestra.
Fine. They're just. Thank you for giving them. To
yes,
me as just like a plus one.
I mean, I'm furnishing
I'd
this.
Have. I'd have Obama because yes. I would love to meet Obama. Why is he so cool?
He's I don't
just,
know.
And you'd have to bring Michelle.
Yep.
Because she's just as cool.
You're
as
You're filling
he is.
This dinner party.
Well, they could share one seat.
They're sharing
I would
a
share
seat.
A seat
okay,
with
fine,
Rob.
Fine.
I would share a seat with Rob.
And Rob's coming too. Okay,
Rob's
fine.
coming, but I'm not. And he's not invited.
Right.
He's coming.
So you still have a seat.
So
he's a big
a
throne.
This is like
seat.
Aladdin, where you get three wishes.
Fine.
I'm just finding ways around this.
Yeah.
And then, I guess it would be. Well, maybe I have if Rob's coming. Maybe I'd have like Frank Sinatra or Dean Martin there. Just yeah. so they can have like competitive singing contests, and I'd like to see the banter. I'd like to see the banter. There'd be like yeah. cheeky banter.
Yeah,
they you know they'd yeah. smoke and drink and yeah, yeah. you know, and then my grandmother and I would kick up our heels, and then ABBA would show up, and Barack yeah. and Michelle.
Oh,
they'd have some
great.
Really good advice for us while we were like all drunk. They'd go like, "This is what you need to do."
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
and they'd tell me the secret to life. And
yeah.
I think it would be a good dinner party.
That sounds great. I want to come.
You can come.
Maybe I could like serve at it or something.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've got flowers that need to be done.
Yeah,
I've
got, you've got candles that
I've
need
got
to be lit.
I've got candles that
I'm
need
there.
To be lit. You know, this is a big
that
thing.
That sounds mega. I would
Does
love to get
that sound
to that
good?
Dinner.
I mean,
it
there's so many
perfect.
People. I feel like they're all dead. I'd just yeah. like to invite a bunch of, you know, like my dad would be there.
Yeah, yeah
I'd have, I mean, Freddie Mercury, he'd yeah. have to make an appearance.
So you would want to have a musical party.
I think I would.
Yeah.
I mean, an acting party would be kind of dry.
No, you want to have a musical party.
I want a
party.
Musical party.
Yeah, amazing.
Right?
I want to come.
Okay, you're invited.
Right. Thank you so much for
Is
that.
That it?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that was
We're
so
done.
Much fun. I feel like we could keep going.
I mean, I totally feel like
Well,
we
I really,
going.
I had a lot of fun.
The one was great. Thank you.
That was brilliant. Well, thanks for talking to me about all that jazz.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.